Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today we are tackling, well, a really big one, one of the most personal, passionate, and let's be honest, sometimes confusing thinkers in philosophy, Søren Kierkegaard.
He really is a giant figure, isn't he? Often called the father of existentialism. Mm-hmm. But yeah, his writing, it's deliberately tricky, full of pseudonyms, paradoxes, irony.
Which is exactly why our sources today are so helpful. We're looking at him through the analysis of Patrick Gardner.
A really valuable lens. Gardner helps cut through some of that intentional difficulty.
Absolutely. So our mission today is pretty clear. We want the shortcut, if there is one, to understanding Kierkegaard's central idea. You know, how did he just fundamentally shift philosophy away from these huge abstract systems?
Towards the actual messy, concrete reality of being a person, a single existing individual.
Right. And this isn't just some dusty old philosophy lesson. Kierkegaard asks the question we still grapple with. How do you live authentically? Especially when maybe the old certainties, religious, moral, whatever, don't feel so certain anymore.
Exactly. His ideas about anxiety and despair and choice, they really feel like a playbook for navigating our modern kind of identity crises. It's incredibly relevant.
Okay, so let's unpack this. And let's start with our guide, Patrick Gardner. Who was he?
Right. So Patrick Gardner, he was a distinguished British philosopher at Oxford, lived 1922 to 1997.
And what makes his take on Kierkegaard so useful?
Well, his authority here is kind of crucial. He specialized in 19th century German and Danish thought, so he knew exactly what Kierkegaard was pushing back against.
The intellectual context, you mean Hegel.
Precisely. The massive shadow of Hegel's systematic philosophy. Gardner understood that background inside and out.
And Gardner himself, his style.
That's the other key thing. He had that, you know, analytical precision common in Anglo-American philosophy, super clear thinking, but he applied it to these really deep, thematic, maybe even murky concerns of continental thought.
So he could make Kierkegaard understandable for, well, for you, the listener, without flattening him out.
Exactly. He wasn't trying to force Kierkegaard into a neat little box, which would frankly miss the whole point. He explains why Kierkegaard had to be so indirect and challenging.
Why was that? Why the pseudonyms and the irony? It wasn't just being difficult for the sake of it.
No, Gardner shows it was a philosophical necessity. Kierkegaard believed that if he just handed you the answers, clearly laid out, you'd just passively absorb them. It wouldn't change you.
Ah, so the indirectness was meant to force engagement.
Yes. To force you, the reader, to move beyond just objective understanding, to get you involved in active, subjective self-reflection. You have to wrestle with it, make a choice, commit passionately.
Okay, that makes sense. So thinking about Gardner's book overall, its goal is really to demystify this deliberately enigmatic figure.
Yeah, and to show that Kierkegaard's core insight is about embracing uncertainty. It's about making these passionate, committed choices that actually define who you become.
It's not just pure reason, but it's not just random feelings either.
Right. He carves out this kind of third way where the passion, the inwardness of your commitment, that's what constitutes the truth for you.
And the sources emphasize this wasn't just armchair philosophy. It came from his life.
Oh, absolutely. Forged in lived experience, his father's deep melancholy, his conflicts with the church, and especially that broken engagement with Regine Olsen.
That looms large, doesn't it?
It really does. The struggle to choose oneself authentically in the face of doubt and potential loss that's woven all through his work.
Okay, let's dive deeper. Where does Gardner start the analysis? What's the big conflict driving Kierkegaard?
It has to begin with his great intellectual battle, the critique of Hegelianism.
Right, Hegel.
Yeah.
Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, the dominant philosopher of the time.
Dominant is putting it mildly. Hegel claimed he'd created this incredible, all-encompassing, rational system, capital S system.
A system that explained everything. Uh-huh. History, consciousness, reality itself.
Pretty much. Wrapped it all up in a giant, logical, objective truth.
And Kierkegaard's reaction.
He found it not just wrong, but like fundamentally offensive. A profound misunderstanding of what it means to be human.
Why offensive?
Because it completely forgot the individual, the single existing person who is born, who suffers, makes choices, faces death. The system had no room for that person.
Gardner uses that great metaphor, doesn't he, about the palace.
It perfectly captures the critique. Kierkegaard said the Hegelian philosopher might build this grand, logically perfect palace of thought.
But then lives in a miserable little shack next door.
Exactly. All the answers in theory, right?
Yeah.
All the abstract, timeless truths. But none of it helps with the actual business of living your life, your choices, your fears, your faith.
The system is abstract, but existence is concrete. It happens in time. It involves risk.
You got it. Hegel wanted to eliminate paradox, uncertainty. Kierkegaard insisted that existence is paradox and uncertainty. You can't systematize lived reality.
Wow. Okay, so that rejection of the system, that focus on the individual's concrete existence, that leads us directly to his famous idea of the stages, right? The stages of life.
The stages of existence, yeah. And Gardner really stresses these aren't like automatic steps on a ladder you climb. They're fundamental choices you have to make about how to live.
Okay, let's break them down. Stage one.
The aesthetic stage. This is life defined by the hunt for pleasure, for novelty, for interesting experiences, and crucially, avoiding boredom and commitment like the plague.
Think Don Juan or the seducer figure in Kierkegaard's book, either or.
Exactly. Constantly moving, constantly seeking stimulation, never tying yourself down to anything or anyone.
In Tintin's world, that sounds familiar.
Oh, doesn't it? It maps perfectly onto so much of modern life. Chasing the next hit, the next trend, the endless scroll, the fear of missing out. It's what Kierkegaard called the repletion method. Always changing things up to avoid that deep existential boredom.
But Gardner points out, this stage doesn't actually work, does it? It leads somewhere else.
It inevitably leads to despair. Profound despair. Because by refusing to make any real binding choices, the aesthetic individual never forms a coherent self. They remain fragmented, rootless.
And the very boredom they were fleeing catches up with them.
Absolutely. It becomes this empty echo. And that despair, that sense of meaninglessness, can then push a person towards the next possibility.
It is.
The ethical stage. This is a conscious choice. A choice for commitment, for duty, for universal moral principles.
So finding meaning not in fleeting pleasure, but in defined roles. Like being a good husband, a responsible citizen, a dedicated professional.
Precisely. You choose yourself, but you choose yourself within the accepted moral framework of the community. Think of Judge William, the other main voice in Either Or. He represents this ethical life.
Living responsibly, trying to do the right thing according to universal rules. Always tell the truth. Honor your commitments.
It's a higher, more integrated way of living than the aesthetic. It offers real substance, but it also has its limits.
Ah, okay. So even the ethical stage isn't the final answer for Kierkegaard. Where does it fall short?
It breaks down when the individual confronts the unavoidable reality of, well, guilt and sin. The recognition that you can't actually live up perfectly to the universal moral law.
You mean like ethical dilemmas, situations where duties conflict?
Exactly that. Or just the sheer impossibility of human perfection. Think about it. The ethical demands absolute consistency, absolute adherence to the universal. But life is messy. Concrete situations are complex.
Like the example you mentioned. What if telling the truth, your universal duty, would cause immense harm in a specific desperate case?
Right. The universal rule cracks under the pressure of concrete existence and individual responsibility. The ethical person realizes their own best efforts are ultimately insufficient.
And that realization leads to its own kind of despair. A despair born not of fragmentation, but of inadequacy.
Yes. A despair that recognizes the gap between the ideal and the real, between the law and the individual's ability to fulfill it. And this despair, in turn, can propel the individual towards the third option.
The religious stage.
The religious stage, and this is the most radical. It's the famous leap of faith.
A leap beyond ethics, beyond reason itself.
That's the idea. It's a personal, paradoxical commitment to the absolute, to God. And the prime example Kierkegaard uses is Abraham.
Abraham being asked to sacrifice Isaac. Okay, let's unpack that phrase. Kierkegaard uses the teleological suspension of the ethical. That's complicated.
It does, but the idea is this. Teleological refers to an ultimate purpose or end, in this case, God's command. Suspension of the ethical means setting aside the universal moral law for the sake of that higher purpose.
So Abraham's ethical duty, the universal rule, is do not kill your son.
Clearly, that's the universal ethical imperative. But his individual absurd duty received directly from God in this story is to do precisely that.
And he's willing to suspend the universal ethical rule for this higher individual paradoxical command.
Yes. And that action is completely incomprehensible from a purely ethical standpoint. You can't justify it with universal reason. It's a relationship between the single individual and the absolute, bypassing the universal.
So the commitment has to be total, personal and maybe even look crazy to everyone else.
That's the essence of the leap. The truth lies in the passion and inwardness of that individual commitment, even when it flies in the face of common sense or universal ethics.
Wow. Okay, so those are the stages. But Kierkegaard was also, you mentioned, a kind of psychologist, looking at the emotions of existence.
Absolutely groundbreaking in that respect. He analyzed core human feelings, most famously anxiety or angst in the original Danish-German.
And this isn't just everyday worry, is it? It's different from specific fear.
Totally different. Fear has an object. You're afraid of the bear, of failing the test. Kierkegaardian angst or anxiety is about something much deeper.
What's it about then?
It's the human response to our own freedom. He famously called it the dizziness of freedom.
Dizziness, like standing on a cliff edge.
Exactly like that. It's that terrifying, vertiginous awareness that we must choose who we are. We have infinite possibilities stretching out before us, but no guaranteed path, no pre-written script.
And that awareness, that sheer potentiality, is inherently anxiety-provoking.
Yes. It's the realization that you are responsible for creating your own meaning and identity out of this radical freedom. It's terrifying, but Kierkegaard sees it as essential.
So anxiety isn't just a negative thing to be medicated away.
Not for him. It's a fundamental signal that you are confronting your freedom. It's actually a prerequisite for authentic growth. You have to feel that dizziness to make a real choice.
Okay, so that's anxiety. What about the other big one? Despair. He called it the sickness unto death.
Right. If anxiety is about the future possibilities of freedom, despair is more about the present self. It's the state of not being your true self.
How so?
It can take different forms. It could be refusing to accept yourself as you are, wishing you were someone else entirely. Or it could be refusing to become the self you are meant to be, maybe staying stuck in the aesthetic stage, or even despairing over being a self at all. It's a fundamental disconnect with one's own existence.
So it's not just sadness or depression necessarily, it's a deeper misalignment.
Exactly, a failure in the relationship to oneself. And like anxiety, Kierkegaard sees it as a crucial signal.
A signal for what?
A signal that your current way of living, your current understanding of yourself, is failing. If you feel that deep despair, Gardner explains, it's telling you that change is needed. Yeah. You need to move perhaps from the aesthetic to the ethical, or from the ethical towards that leap of faith.
So authentic living involves facing these difficult emotions, anxiety, despair, and using them as guides, not running away from them.
That's absolutely central. Don't flee the dizziness. Don't paper over the despair. Acknowledge them. Understand what they're telling you about your existence and let them feel the necessary choices towards becoming who you truly are.
Okay, this is deep stuff. Let's try and pull out some key themes. What does all this mean for you, the listener, right now?
Theme one, and it's maybe the most famous, subjectivity is truth.
Right, we touched on that. What does it really mean in practice?
It means the things that matter most. Your values, your purpose, maybe your faith. These aren't things you can prove objectively like a math equation. Their truth lies in your passionate inward commitment to them.
So it's not about finding external validation, but about internal conviction.
Precisely. Think about a core belief you hold. Does it feel true because everyone agrees, or because you have chosen to live by it, to invest yourself in it? That inward appropriation is the truth for you.
Okay, theme two.
The individual against the system, or maybe against the crowd. Kierkegaard was a fierce defender of individual dignity against the pressures of conformity.
The pressure to just go along with what everyone else thinks or does.
Exactly. The anonymity of the crowd, he called it. He argued that genuine identity, authentic selfhood, is forged in personal choice and conviction, often against the grain, not by simply adopting group opinions or following trends.
That feels incredibly relevant today with social media and polarized groups.
Doesn't it? How much are your choices, even your opinions, shaped by wanting approval from your tribe rather than your own deep personal reflection? It's a constant challenge.
Okay, a third theme.
Maybe the necessity of paradox. Kierkegaard insists that authentic existence means holding seemingly contradictory ideas together.
Like what?
Like embracing both the terrifying uncertainty of freedom and making passionate commitments, like acknowledging objective reality and insisting on subjective passion. If you try to smooth out all the paradoxes, like Hegel tried to do,
you end up with a neat system but a hollow life, like that palace in the hovel.
You got it. Life is paradoxical, and embracing that is key.
Gardner's book must be full of memorable lines capturing these ideas.
Oh, absolutely. Kierkegaard is incredibly quotable, even if sometimes cryptically.
Give us a couple of key ones Gardner highlights.
Well, the big one we keep coming back to. truth is subjectivity. The reality of the truth for you is found in the passion of your commitment.
Okay, makes sense in this context. Another one.
How about anxiety is the dizziness of freedom? We talked about that. It just perfectly captures that terrifying, exhilarating feeling of infinite possibility when you realize you have to choose.
Yeah, that one really sticks. One more.
Maybe this one, which speaks to how we live day to day. Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards.
Ah, so you can analyze the past, but you have to act now without knowing the future outcome.
Exactly. You have to make fundamental choices about who you are and what you value now, accepting the uncertainty and the risk without the benefit of hindsight. You live forward into the unknown.
Powerful stuff. Okay, so how can we make this practical? How can you, listening now, actually apply some of these deep Kierkegaardian ideas?
Well, one area is authentic decision-making, meaning maybe stop relying only on rational pros and cons lists for the really big life choices, career, relationships, major commitments.
But that's how we're often told to decide things.
I know. But Kierkegaard would suggest asking a different question. What choice resonates with your deepest values, your most authentic sense of self, even if it looks risky or illogical on paper?
So prioritize the subjective commitment over the objective calculation.
In those fundamental choices, yes. The meaning comes from the passionate choice itself, not from the spreadsheet proving it was optimal.
Okay, what else? We talked about the aesthetic stage in modern life.
Right. That endless hunt for novelty, the scrolling, the fear of boredom. It's the aesthetic rotation method on steroids. We're constantly trying to distract ourselves from, well, from the anxiety of commitment.
So the practical tip is?
Maybe consciously seek meaning in long-term commitment, whether it's a difficult project, a challenging relationship, mastering a skill. Embrace the struggle against boredom and distraction. Kierkegaard suggests that's where real identity is forged, not in fleeting gratification.
That's countercultural, isn't it?
Deeply. And one more, reframing negative emotion.
Like anxiety.
Exactly. When that feeling hits the Kierkegaardian angst, try not to just see it as something wrong, something pathological to get rid of.
Instead,
try seeing it as a signal, a sign that you're actually confronting real freedom, a significant choice, a moment of potential growth. You're not necessarily broken. You're facing the vastness of your own possibility. Use it. Let it be a catalyst.
Okay, let's zoom out. Connecting all this to the bigger picture, Gardner's analysis really shows Kierkegaard's impact, doesn't it?
Absolutely. He shows why Kierkegaard essentially laid the foundation for modern existentialism. He gave us the vocabulary, the concepts to understand that uncertainty, doubt, anxiety, these aren't problems to be solved to live a good life.
They're part of it.
They are essential ingredients of a meaningful, authentic human life.
So if there's one big takeaway for you, the learner, from our dive into Kierkegaard via Gardner,
I think it's this. Authentic existence demands that you embrace uncertainty. You can't wait until you have all the answers, until everything is perfectly clear.
Because that moment never comes.
Right. You have to act, commit, choose while embracing the uncertainty. Maintain passionate commitment to your core values in the midst of doubt. Don't wait for understanding before you act. Act your way into understanding.
Okay. That leaves us with a final, maybe provocative thought for you to consider.
Here it is. We live today absolutely surrounded, maybe even dominated by listums. Think about AI, algorithms, social media metrics, political polling.
Systems that promise certainty, or at least predictability.
Exactly. They offer answers, paths, approval scores. So the question is, are we increasingly using these external systems to deliberately shield ourselves from that necessary, if uncomfortable, dizziness of our own freedom?
Are we outsourcing our choices, our authenticity, to the algorithms to avoid the anxiety of having to choose for ourselves? A sobering thought to end on. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.